What happens when we die? Do we really die alone? What if death is not the end, but a new beginning? As the dying prepare to leave this world, they often begin to get a glimpse of what lies beyond through deathbed visits from deceased loved ones, strangers, angels, or divine figures. Religious beliefs appear to have no bearing on these experiences. Even atheists and non-believers have reported such phenomena. At times, these visits are experienced by others in the room, offering incredible validity to the idea that life does continue. Our guest today is Josie Varga. She is dedicated and passionate about her research into metaphysics and the afterlife. Josie is a popular blogger and motivational speaker. She strives to teach others why happiness is all a matter of how we think. She's offered several books, including A Call from Heaven, which is personal accounts of deathbed visits, angelic visions, and crossing to the other side. And we're going to talk to her about her book today and about this topic, which is on everybody's mind. Josie, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having me, Wayne. It's my pleasure.
How did you get into this?
Oh, that's a good question. And I'm glad you asked it, because what I often tell people, Wayne, is if you asked me, you know, or told me 20 years ago, if you said, Josie, you're going to write spiritual books and you're going to write about the afterlife, I would have looked at you like you were nuts, okay? But everything happens for a reason. And what happened to me is I had a vivid dream about my husband's friend who died in the World Trade Center attacks of 9/11. Now, before I go further, I just want to mention that I did not know him, okay? I saw pictures of him because he had sent Christmas cards, and I spoke to him on the phone, but I never met him, okay? And in this particular dream, I'm going down this hallway, I come into this room, and I see desks and windows everywhere, and all of a sudden, I see my husband's friend. Now, remember, I've never met him, but yet, in this very vivid dream, I knew it was him. And he said to me, Josie. Now, when I say he said it to me, he said it telepathically, mind to mind, okay? So there were no words. He said, Josie, thank you for mentioning me in your book. And what he was referring to, at that time, I mentioned him in my first book, Footprints in the Sand, which is about my journey. You know, I had a disability. I was born with cerebral palsy and all that. So that's what the book was about. And I included an email that he wrote in the epilogue of my book. So in this dream, he says, thank you for mentioning me in your book, right? And for reasons that I cannot explain, I said to him, Rich, his name was Rich, I said, Rich, you have to prove to me that this is really you. Now, why I said that, I don't know. But I said, you have to prove to me that this is really you. The next thing I know, he picks up a cell phone. It was one of those flip phones. He opened it up, and he showed me a picture of him, his wife, and his son. And he said, Boston is okay. I had no idea what Boston is okay meant, but I understood that this was a message that he wanted me to get to his wife. The next thing I know, I find myself kind of on the street, and I look out, and I see Rich, and he's standing behind his wife and son, and he looks at me like, go ahead, you know, give them the message, and sort of pushes me forward, okay? Sort of pushes me forward. And when he did that, I woke up in a sitting position, panting and out of breath. So the first thing I did was I called my husband, who was already at work. I told him what happened, and I said, honey, you have to tell Rich's wife that Boston is okay. Well, how do you think he reacted, Wayne? He reacted like I was crazy. You know, I'm not going to do that. That's insane. And we compromised. I said to him, I'll tell you what, I'll send an email to you and you send it to Rich's sister-in-law. They knew one another. They worked in the same field. I said, if she thinks it's appropriate, she can forward it to her sister, Rich's wife, okay? So to make a very long story short, I wrote the email. I sent it to my husband. He forwarded it to Rich's sister-in-law. And a couple weeks later, we got an email from her saying, basically, how did Josie know? Remember what I said? He said to me, tell my wife Boston is okay. Well, she had a brother in Boston. She was considering selling her home and moving to Boston. But she felt guilty because she purchased the house right before her husband passed away. Now, again, I knew nothing of his family. I never met anyone. I didn't know she had a brother in Boston. Yet, in the dream, I was told Boston is okay. So it shook me, as you could imagine. It shook me to the core. And at first, I was, you know, afraid. I didn't want people to think I was crazy. So it wasn't like I went around telling everybody about it. But as time went on, I began to research the phenomena. I wanted to know, you know, if there were others out there. I wanted to know that I wasn't alone. And it was incredible what I found. I mean, I found stories from around the world. So that's what led into my research into metaphysics. And as far as the current book, interesting story with the current book, I had an appointment with my primary care physician when I went for my annual checkup. And we always get into conversations about what he and I both do, you know. And he looked at me and he said, hey, Josie, you know, are you working on any more books? And at the time, I was working on a book called Divine Visits, which is about angelic and divine encounters. So we were talking about the book, and I said, hey, Dr. Toro, you know, I talked to a doctor, and he said these experiences are happening more and more. And he surprised me because he responded, yeah, I know. I just had an experience this week. So I looked at him and I said, really, what happened? He started to tell me that he had a patient and they couldn't do anything more for her at his hospital, okay? So he goes into the room to tell this patient that they were going to transport her to a different hospital. But when he did that, he goes into the room and there's family and friends in the room, so he's not alone with her. And she looks at him and she says, no. And he's like, what do you mean? And she says, no, it's my time. She says, my grandson is here. Well, he was told that the grandson that she was referring to actually was killed in the Iraq War. So as he's standing there, she's carrying on a conversation with her grandson. And I interrupted him and said, well, Dr. Toro, do you think that she was hallucinating? And he looked at me and he said, no. He said, absolutely not. He said, she was completely coherent. He said, in fact, she joked with her friend who was in the room, and she said, now when I'm gone, that doesn't mean you can date my husband. He said, she was completely coherent, okay? So then all of a sudden, she looks around the room. She says, okay, I'm ready. And he said, within a few minutes, she passed away. So he told me that story, and I explained to him that this was called, you know, deathbed visits. And from that day forward, I started to research, you know, deathbed phenomena. And that's how a call from heaven came into being. So I feel like I've been led to pretty much write all of my books when.
I read your book and finished last night, and I've got to tell everybody this, excellent book. And congratulations for writing something that's really significant.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you.
You told a story about Dr. Eben Alexander. And mm-hmm. Would you tell our audience about that and the conclusion?
Well, basically, you know, Dr. Eben Alexander, as you know, was a neurosurgeon. And Dr. Alexander has a near-death experience. And then suddenly, everything that he learned in medical school suddenly didn't apply. Okay, and what I mean by that is, well, when he was training in medical school, he was told that consciousness was inside the brain, you know. Consciousness was created by the brain. And then he comes out of his experience and he realizes, wait a minute, you know, that was all wrong. And he said, what he says now is, the brain doesn't generate consciousness, but rather acts as a sort of filter. So consciousness is what creates physical reality. And, you know, I'm thrilled that he agreed to be interviewed for the book. An incredible man. And, you know, what I always say about consciousness, when you think about it, if consciousness was inside the brain, okay, if consciousness was not outside of the brain, then none of these spiritual phenomena would be able to take place. Think about that. You know, how would these deathbed visions happen? How would this, you know, afterlife communication take place? How would these near-death experiences take place? It wouldn't be able to happen if consciousness was not outside of the brain.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, when I was working on the book, have you ever heard of the term terminal lucidity?
Yeah, you talked about it in your book.
Yeah. That, I thought, was so interesting. And what that means is, it's used to describe the unexpected return of mental clarity, you know, right before death, with people who are previously incoherent. And really, when you think about it, that's really amazing. Because there's a story about a doctor named Dr. Scott Haig in New York. And he talks about a patient who basically had no brain stem left, you know, was basically a vegetable, you know, didn't move, nothing. And then suddenly, you know, he had no brain activity, nothing. And then suddenly, 10 minutes before he died, he wakes up and was able to converse with his family and talk to his family. And then he passed away. And this is something that, you know, they are seeing a lot with these deathbed visions. And another interesting thing, I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Alexander Bethany. And he's with the University of Vienna. And he is doing studies on patients with Alzheimer's disease, okay? And, you know, when you think about Alzheimer's disease, Alzheimer's kills nerve cells and tissue in the brain, okay? There is, you know, the brain is pretty much not there. But yet he's doing a study on people who have Alzheimer's disease that suddenly are able to communicate right before they die. And, you know, as you know, as a doctor, the brain doesn't suddenly fill up with new neurons. The brain remains exactly how it was prior to the communication. But yet this communication is able to take place. I mean, as a doctor, how do you explain that?
Well, I've changed quite a bit from the time I went to medical school and got that education. I think spiritually now about things, and as opposed to clinically the way that I was trained. So
mm-hmm.
I made quite a change during my lifetime.
Yeah, it's really amazing. One of the earliest cases they had on they have on record, I mentioned this one in the book, is a woman. I don't know if you remember reading this, but there's a woman named Anna Catherine Ema. She died in 1922, and she was a severely disabled woman who lived in a mental institution, never talked, never had any communication from her whatsoever, you know, and what was amazing is right before she died, she suddenly became alert and started singing songs 30 minutes before she died. And she sang, if I remember correctly, "Where does the soul find its home? It's peace. Peace, peace, heavenly peace," over and over again. Now remember, this is a woman who never had any kind of communication, who never spoke, but yet she was able to sing this song 30 minutes before she died. So, you know, there are amazing stories out there, and I think the highlight for me was when I did research and I came across a term called peak and Darien experiences.
Yes.
I had the pleasure of speaking speaking to Dr. Bruce Gleason at the University of Virginia, and he did a detailed study on these phenomena. And what that means is, when people mention people in the room that they didn't know was deceased, the term is taken from a, I think, 1882 book by Frances Kolb, and she discusses cases in which those under deathbeds mention the presence of a deceased person of whose death they had no knowledge, okay? So these experiences are called peak and daring experiences. And Bruce told me the story, a wonderful story, which is one of my favorites. I mention it all the time. The little boy named Eddie Cuomo, he had a very high fever when, and he was in a coma. And then almost after 36 hours, he opens his eyes. And he starts to tell his parents, that you know, who are in the room, he says, hey, you know, I went to heaven. And he talks about the people that he saw. He talks about his deceased grandfather, his aunt, his uncle. And then all of a sudden, he shocks his mother and father by saying that he also saw his 19-year-old sister, Teresa. And he says to them, but you know, Daddy, she told me that I had to go back. And his father becomes very upset. And he says to his son, you know, what are you talking about? I just spoke to Teresa 2 days ago. You know, she's away at college in Vermont. I just talked to her. She's fine. And the son's like, no, Dad, no. You know, she told me that it wasn't my time, that I had to go back. So what happened was the father goes home that day, and he finds a message from the school. And he tells me, you know, he said was his sister had actually passed away. She was killed in a motor vehicle accident just after midnight, but the parents didn't know about it. So the son was correct. The sister was deceased. Now every time I tell that story, it gives me goosebumps. Because again, how else do you explain that? You know, to me there's just no other explanation. Because his parents didn't even know that the daughter was deceased. But yet the little boy comes out of a coma and tells the parents that his sister was dead and his sister was in heaven and told him he had to come back?
Well, you know, Jonesy, a lot of people live their life on this planet just by what they pick up from their five senses. But there is a metaphysical type of learning and knowledge and spirit that goes beyond that, and you can't see it or hear it or feel it or taste it or whatever. And that's what you and I, you know, are talking about here. If you just exist on a plane that takes no further into the dynamics of the situation than what we can see and feel and hear and taste and touch, then you're missing out on a lot.
Yeah, you sure are. Yeah. I mean, we are much more than we think we are.
Exactly.
You know, we are not, what they often say, what Edgar Casey often said, is that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Right.
And that's a good way to put it. And what I often say, you know, like, skeptics will say, for example, okay, you know, oh, well, it can't be tested in a lab, so it can't be true. However, think about it for a minute. Everything that we see on Earth, okay, say the sun, the stars, the rocks, everything, whatever we see on Earth makes up 5% of the mass of the universe. The rest is composed of dark matter and dark energy, right? Okay, so most of the universe, then, is composed of matter that cannot be observed. However, we know it's there. We know it's there due to its gravitational effect. You know? So, I say that in studying the non-physical world, science will finally come to understand the physical world. And that's one of the things that I talk about in the book.
Right. my radio show, Share Your Mission, which has evolved into an internet show now, Freedom from Addiction on iTunes, has been running for 17 years. And in those 17 years, I have been very interested in near-death experiences, terminal lucidity, and the kind of things that you talk about. Also, I'm interested in reincarnation of the soul. And I've talked to some of the leaders in this way of thinking about things over the years, like PMH Atwater on the big book of near-death experiences, Dr. Raymond Moody, who was one of the first to talk about near-death experiences.
He actually created the term.
Melvin Morse, Dr. Morse. He had a story about a girl in a swimming pool. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, the girl who said to him, "Don't worry, Dr. Morse, heaven is beautiful."
Yeah, that
one?
That was the story.
I remember he told me about that. He revived a little girl, and she had, you know, she drew a picture of heaven, and she said to him, "Don't worry, Dr. Morse, heaven is beautiful." I mean, that's, he's done a lot of impressive work as well.
She was in the
But, you know, it's like I often say, the more you learn about spiritual phenomena, the more you need to know. You know, when I wrote Visits from Heaven, I really didn't... The first book I wrote, Visits from Heaven, was about evidential afterlife communication. And at the time, I never realized that I would continue on and follow that with Visits to Heaven, which is about NDEs, and Divine Visits, which is about angelic and divine encounters, and now A Call from Heaven, which is about deathbed visits. But these deathbed visits are really amazing. I mean, they clearly point to an afterlife. They clearly provide evidence or proof that love truly never dies. I'll give you an example of one of my favorites from the book, Wim, because this particular story is evidential. There's a woman, I don't know if you've ever interviewed her, but Barbara Harris Whitfield. Okay, she had two NDEs. She wrote a book called, she wrote several books, but one of them is The Natural Soul. And when I was first doing research on this phenomena, her story was one of the first that I came across, okay? So I called her and asked her about it. And she told me that she was doing work in a hospital, and she had a patient named John. And she said John was a young man in his early 30s. He was paralyzed, completely bedridden. He was dependent on the staff for his every need, okay? The only thing that he had when was he still had his ability to speak. But then he started to lose that too. So at the end, he decided, you know, okay, he didn't want to live anymore. And he fought with the state of Connecticut for the right to die, okay, because now he was dependent on an electronic voice box to speak. So he wins the case, and she's in his room, and they say, okay, we're going to disconnect him, and they disconnect him around, from life support around 10 a.m., and they're expecting him to die within a couple of hours. And one of the things that Barbara said is his last statement through the voice box was, "They are coming for me at 5 o'clock. She even told me that, you know, other people in the room were like, "What?" They didn't understand what he said. And she repeated to them, "He says they are coming for me at 5 o'clock. Okay, they didn't think much of it, right? They take him off life support. They expect him to die within a couple of hours, but you know what? He held on, he held on, he held on. He died at exactly 5 o'clock. So that's another one. You know, how do you explain that? They didn't expect him to last that long. And then let me ask you, as a doctor, when you take somebody off life support, how long does it typically take for them to pass? Is it normal for them to take that long to cross over?
Well, you know, they taught me in medical school that the brain only lasts 5 to 7 minutes without oxygen. And
oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and that story with Dr. Morse, that girl was underwater for 20 minutes without oxygen, and mm-hmm. she came back to life. And so you can't take the old way of thinking about things and apply it, because we got too much proof that some of that stuff is not valid. And
you know, I think that there are things that we will never understand in this physical reality. I think that there are things that, you know, we will only understand when we, you know, get to the other side. But one thing that I can say with certainty is there is something beyond, you know, this life. And, you know, death is certainly not the end. You know, there's so many stories in my book that point to this. And they're all, you know, what I often say is they're all different, but very much alike. There's another one, it's a little bit different. There was a woman who was in the hospital with her father who was dying from cancer, okay? Now, her sister had passed away a few months prior. So they're in the room, and the father says to them that he could see the sky. And, you know, there are very different types of deathbed visits, okay? There's what I say, visual, you know, like seeing deceased loved ones. There's a gateway in deathbed visits where you see almost like a portal opening up in the room. There's atmospheric changes, you know, like the temperatures drop in the room or the appearance of white light or things like that. There's synchronicity. You know, I've seen this many times where, like, for example, say clocks will stop at the exact moment of death, or the phones will ring at the exact moment of death. Dreams, there are many things like this in the book. Dreams, people have dreams at the exact moment that someone passed away. Auditory, where people hear music. And also shared deathbed visits, where people in the room share the experience. So, having explained that, let me get back to the story. So, in this particular story, they're in the room, and the father is describing a portal. He's saying, you know, can you see that? You know, I can see a beautiful sky up in the ceiling. And they don't see any of that wind. The only thing they see is a white ceiling. So then, a couple of days later, she said her father kept wanting to get up and go towards something. You know, he wanted to get up and go towards something. And they were like, no, Dad, you know, sit down. You're gonna hurt yourself. Sit down. And then finally he lays back down. And she says, all of a sudden, she said, the dimly lit hospital room filled up with this beautiful light, right? And remember I said her sister had passed away. She said, suddenly she heard her sister whisper to her, don't worry, heaven is beautiful. And then shortly after that, her father passed away. So that's an interesting one, because that, you know, a couple of days prior, he sees the portal, he sees the opening in the room, and then he also, you know, feels the urge to go towards someone, which is common as well. You know, people typically reach for something, you know. There's one story in the book called Take My Hand. And I, you know, I kind of felt bad for the wife, because she was telling me her husband's on his deathbed, and he's reaching forward, and he's saying, take my hand. So what does she think? She thought he meant her. So he goes to take her hand. I mean, she goes to take his hand. And when she did, he said, no, 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 not you. So she said, you know, there was someone else in the room, and he kept reaching for that person. Then shortly after, he passed away. And, you know, and as I said in the book, I've seen this many times in my own family, right before my grandmother died. Well, there's a long story with my grandmother. My grandmother died of a heart attack. And we had gone to her house that night, you know, and she refused to go to the hospital. And my mother said to me, you know, don't worry, I'm going to stay with your grandmother. And I had an exam the next day. And my mother said, you know, you go to school and, you know, I'll let you know what happens. I said, okay, so I went home. I went to school. I'm sitting at my desk ready to take the test. And a feeling came over me. I mean, I knew that my grandmother had passed away. You know, I didn't realize it at the time that it was kind of like a shared deathbed visit, but I could feel that my grandmother was crossing over. So I got up from my desk when I went over to the teacher. I told her that my grandmother had had a heart attack the night before, that I needed to, you know, I needed to get to her. I get to the car, I'm completely sobbing. I get to the hospital, and my grandmother was already deceased. So what I was feeling was actually real. But a couple of days after, my mother told me that that night, my grandmother told her, my mother's name is Anne, but she called her Anna in Italian. So she says, Anna, your father is right over there. And my mother said, what? She said, your father, he's right over there. But I also found out from my cousin, 2 weeks prior to that, my grandmother told my cousin that my grandfather had come for her. So what's interesting with these deathbed phenomena is they don't necessarily happen right before death. It can happen, you know, weeks, hours, you know, something can happen months before to trigger that something is, you know, that something is going to happen, like the case of my grandmother seeing my grandfather, which she didn't tell me, but that's something my cousin told me, so that was interesting too.
All right. I want to draw back. We talked about Dr. Alexander. He was a neurosurgeon, medical doctor, had a near-death experience, came back, and this highly respected man who didn't believe in this before he had his near-death experience came to the conclusion, and I want to read from your book, Dr. Alexander further explains his views on consciousness by saying that consciousness is primary and generates everything else. Consciousness
right.
is the thing that exists. The spirit and the soul also exist and are eternal. The mystery is in better defining how consciousness interacts with the physical world. He also said our souls are eternal. We do not need to fear death. Life does not end with a physical body. And since that was such an important part of his life, I wanted to read it to the audience, because there's been over a million near-death experience stories over history throughout the world. And you don't get a million stories of something and it not be true. I mean, just I wouldn't believe that all these stories come from not having oxygen in the brain or chemicals or whatever. I can't believe that. And I think that for the people who are listening today, you can feel confident that there is something, another side that you're going to go to. And everybody that's gone there and the ones that have come back said it's a great experience. So don't fear death, because if you fear death, you can't experience life. You'd be thinking about my death, and you won't be able to create while you're here. So that's one of the messages that I wanted to say today. Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful, that's a good way to put it. And if you remember in the book, I talked about what I call VBU, which stands for volume, believability, and uniformity.
Uh-huh.
What I say in the book, you talked about, you know, how there are so many people having these experiences, okay? So think about that. When you read a book like mine, A Call from Heaven, consider the volume. How many people have reported such phenomena? Consider believability. How credible are these experiences? Now, you just mentioned Dr. Evan Alexander, okay? So you have prominent doctors, prominent, you know, people that are having these experiences, and then uniformity. How similar, you know, are the claims? So I'm not saying that you should take every experience as truth, because you shouldn't. You know, not every story out there is true. But when you consider spiritual phenomena, consider the VBU, consider the volume, the believability, the uniformity. You know, that to me is very important. And as far as, you know, some people say, oh, well, you know, these experiences are just anecdotal, you know, they're just experiences, and they can't be considered proof. But they can be considered proof. That doesn't make any sense. You know, Albert Einstein himself, he once said, all knowledge of reality starts with experience and ends in it. So all knowledge, okay, starts with personal experience.
Absolutely. I think Einstein said you can approach things like nothing is a miracle or everything is a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
It comes to your way of looking at something. The cup is half empty or the cup is half full. And depending on what your thoughts are and how you think about things depends on what kind of life you have.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned this quote in the book. It's a man named Chris Carter, an author. Not Chris Carter, the Hall of Famer football player, not him, but Chris Carter, he was an author. He wrote a book called Science and the Afterlife Experience, I believe the name of the book is. And what he said was so interesting. I came across his quote, and I had to put it in the book. He said, quote, the manner in which we live our lives, to a large extent, depends on what we believe comes after it. The manner in which we live our lives, to a large extent, depends on what we believe comes after it.
Absolutely.
And that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like one thing that I talk about, you know, Dr. Peter Fenwick talks about this a lot in his books. So he wrote the foreword to A Call from Heaven, and he is a renowned expert in deathbed phenomena and near-death experiences. So to say that I am, you know, thrilled to have his support is an understatement. But, you know, it's just really, it's really amazing. It really is.
You interviewed Carla Wills Brandon. Dr. Brandon has a PhD. Would you tell our audience her story?
Carla Wills Brandon, yeah. She wrote a book called One Last Hug, which she talks about near-death experiences. And she talks about deathbed visits. And she talks about the difference between hallucinations and deathbed phenomena. Because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, these deathbed phenomena are just the result of drugs. You know, they're just the result of, you know, the morphine. But she said that's not, you know, typically the case. Hallucinations are also not typical of deceased relatives. In other words, if you're having a hallucination, most of the time you're not going to say, oh, I saw my father or I saw my mother. You know, you're going to see something you don't recognize or a scary figure or something like that, okay? And one of the things that she says, and I quote her in my book, she said, if deathbed visits are just the result of the dying brain, oxygen deprivation, neurosis, or chemical imbalances, why are most of the visions of people who are deceased? Why do these visions typically involve not just visions, but visitations from the other side? If deathbed visits were hallucinations or the result of random firings of brain synapses, why are the themes of these visions so consistent with one another? Hallucinations from one person to the next are not this consistent. The byproduct of random firings of the brain produces chaotic visions, not consistent encounters with deceased relatives. And that's so true. You know, when these behaviors are hallucinations, okay, they can generally be controlled by medication. However, these deathbed visits cannot be controlled. It doesn't matter. They occur regardless of whether or not the patient is medicated. And just to give you some differences, when you have a hallucination, hallucinations are typically, you know, fearful, confusion, deathbed visits are comforting and peaceful. Hallucinations are typically psychotic. Deathbed visits are coherent and consistent. Hallucinations are definitely not spiritually transformative, okay? But deathbed visits are very transformative. Hallucinations occur during states of paranoia. But these deathbed visits, as I said before, can occur minutes, days, weeks, or even months before death. And the other thing is, hallucinations are very non-realistic. But these deathbed visits are extremely realistic. And remember the story I told before about Peak and Darien experiences, where people see others in the room they didn't know were dead? You know, hallucinations obviously cannot be shared, but deathbed visits can be shared. So, you know, the two are very, very different.
Yes. Getting back to your interview with Carla Wills Brand, and Dr. Brandon said, "We come into the material world to learn. As spirit in material form, we learn things that we wouldn't have otherwise learned in the spirit world. This is for our growth. So there are challenges and lessons for us to be had. But at the same time, we're also supposed to recognize how we can create that afterlife existence here in the material world. When we've cleaned up the wreckage of our own past, our addictions, our traumas and losses, along with our unresolved grief, then we can open up to spirit. We must make peace with ourselves, our family, our friends, our community, before jumping into the exploration of afterlife matters. After doing this, we can then begin our spiritual exploration and learn the importance of service to others. Making peace with family, past friends, and lovers who have harmed us doesn't always mean inviting them back into our lives. What this means is that it is essential that we heal our resentments, losses, fear, shame, and more. So, we are here for a purpose." And, you know, my belief is that God has given everybody on the planet a purpose. And if they can figure out what that purpose is and then take action to try to live that purpose, they will have a totally different life, a life free of addictions and most of the bad things that happen to people. And I,
she's saying you have to get past, you know, like she had an addiction to alcoholism, okay?
Yeah.
So, but she got past that, and once she got past that, she was able to open up more to spirit. She was able to, you know, help others. So once we can get, you know, past our own demons, our own addictions, we can open up more to spirit. You know, that's pretty much, you know, what she's saying.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as you know, there's so many addictions out there. But when you, you know, focus on the positive, you have to get past all those negative feelings,
yeah,
and focus more on, you know, love and forgiveness. And the more we can do that, the more open we are to spirit. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. One more quote, since this is terribly important, from her. She says, "In my practice, I have individuals who have suffered from severe trauma, extreme loss, and as a consequence, they've become involved with drugs or alcohol or other addictions. Some are suicidal or very self-destructive. Tucked away in the recesses of their mind, oftentimes, is an afterlife experience. Once the trauma has been cleared away, their addictions are in check, self-destructive behavior is put aside, and the emotions of rage, shame, and pain have been addressed, then we can look at these afterlife contacts. Such encounters can then provide the building blocks for continued spiritual growth. This is my purpose, to facilitate healing. And I thought that goes just hand in hand with what I believe and what I've been trying to share with the world for the last 30, 40 years. And your book brings a lot of things to light.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point that Carla Rose Brandon makes there, you know, because a lot of times that people have these spiritual experiences, like, for instance, near-death experiences. Prior to Raymond Moody coming out with his book, you know, Life After Life, think about it. Many people didn't know anything about near-death experiences. Many people did not understand, you know, what was happening to them. So what happened? They kept quiet about it. And as she's saying here, a lot of people have these experiences. They feel like they have nowhere to turn, so they turn to drugs and alcohol. And then once they, you know, receive counseling and they realize that, you know, this is not unusual. You know, they're not crazy. They're not alone. There are many people out there who are having the same experience. So once they understand that, then they can open up more to spirit and, you know, and find comfort and relief. So that's very important. I just got a testimonial the other day, which epitomizes why I do what I do. My little girl, I have a 15-year-old, and she said to me, "Mommy, you know, why do you do what you do?" And I went and I got a copy of the testimonial, and I gave it to her, and I said, "Leah, read it." And what this woman basically said in her testimonial, she said, "Josie, I just finished a call from heaven." She said, "And as I read through all the stories, when I got to the end, I said to myself, oh my God, this really is real." She said, "My husband died 2 years ago." She said, "Thank you for confirming the many visits from heaven that I have received from him." And she said, "Because of you, I can sleep tonight." And I can't tell you how much those words mean to me. Because, you know, the reason that I do what I do is to help others, is to, you know, bring comfort to the bereaved. Because when I first had my experience, when I first, you know, had that encounter with my husband's friend who died at 9/11, it wasn't like I had that dream and I went running around and saying, "Hey, yeah, you know, life never ends, love never dies, you know," or anything like that. I was actually afraid at first, because I thought, okay, everybody's going to think I'm nuts. But what happened was, I was talking to my sister-in-law, Sherry, and she said to me, "Josie, don't you realize that you've been given a gift?" And when she said that to me, it kind of like hit me. I'm like, oh my God, you're right. You know, I have been given a gift. So that at that point, I decided, you know, I need to share these stories. I need to share this phenomena so that other people know that they're not alone, you know. And the response has been truly amazing. I mean, you know, you were talking before about fulfilling your life's purpose. And I truly believe that I have found mine. You know, sometimes the smallest acts bring the greatest rewards. You know, I was talking to another radio show host last week, and he said, "Josie, you know, how do I know if I'm going to fulfill my life purpose?" And I said to him, "Well, how do you know you're not fulfilling it right now? You know, like, look at you. You've done this radio show for how many years? 17, did you say?
17 so far.
I mean, think about it. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, and what I say all the time, and I mean this sincerely, I say, if I can help just one person, then I've done my job. So, you know, so that woman who sent me that beautiful testimonial and said, because of me, she can sleep, I said to my daughter, "So, Leah, that's Mommy's one person." And she said, "I understand, Mom." So it's really not, when it comes to these experiences and the spiritual phenomena and everything, it's really not about me. It's about the message. It's about getting the message out there. So that's what I think is so important.
Yes. My new book, which is called Freedom from Addiction 3, or should be coming out within the month. And one of the things that makes it so important for the listeners to get a copy of is it tells you a way of having a much better life. And the key point is that you were created special by God for a special purpose. Mm-hmm. And if you can figure out what that is, and I tell you in the book how to figure it out, and then you'll take action on that, you'll have a life that's totally different from what you would have had otherwise.
Exactly, because it's just, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I'm not going to lie and tell you it's easy to do what I do, because working with the bereaved is so hard for me sometimes. It's so overwhelming, you know. How do I explain to a mother that comes to me and says, you know, why did God take my little girl, or, you know, something like that? It's so hard. But at the same time, I just focus on the reason that I do what I do. I focus on, like I said before, I focus on, you know, the message. So, but I do want to read your book.
Well, you really will get a different idea of the whole deal of addiction, why it's here, what we can do about it, and so just like your book is terribly important for everybody to read, so is this one. And how do they get a copy of your book, by the way?
It's available online, when or wherever books are sold. I mean, you know, it's in Barnes & Noble. I'm doing a book signing May 7th at the Barnes & Noble in Clark, New Jersey. So for anybody that is in that area, I'll be at the Barnes & Noble in Clark, New Jersey at 2 p.m. On Sunday, May 7th. But the book is available online or wherever books are sold. And they can also go to my website, which is josievarga.com.
That's great. You know, I could talk to you for a long, long time.
Well, you can call me anytime. How about that?
I've only asked you about half the questions that I had written down to ask you. And I would say for the people that like what they've heard today, go get the book, because there's so many more stories in there that we did not get a chance to talk about that it'll just blow you away. You got to get a copy of this book, A Call from Heaven. Josie, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you.
Okay.